Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio, where we bring you information about Minnesota's National Guard, the military community, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon program, and Department of Veterans Affairs. Your host is Tom Lyons, founder and owner of Phalon Partners Limited, a Twin Cities merger and acquisition advisory firm. Tom is also a Vietnam veteran of the United States Air Force and a member of the VFW and American Legion. Now, here's Tom Lyons.
Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. On today's show, we learn about Minnesota's transition assistance advisors. But first, it's time for Generally Speaking, a weekly message from the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General Rick Nash.
Tomorrow is Memorial Day, a day for us to pay tribute to the men and women who died in service to our country. Minnesotans have served and died in conflicts ranging from the Battle of Gettysburg to our present-day conflicts. And though Memorial Day is set aside to remember those who have died, it is also a day for us to honor their lives and their service. I encourage you to go out into your community tomorrow and attend an event sponsored by your local veterans organizations. Meet the veterans there and listen to their stories. Minnesota Military Radio is hosting a special three-hour program Monday in honor of Memorial Day. If you're in the Twin Cities listening area, spend the morning with Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, tomorrow from 6 to 9. Or if you're outside the area, listen to the podcast at MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com. Most importantly on this Memorial Day, I want you to know that freedom is not free. Please take a moment from your picnics and barbecues this year to remember that many brave Americans died in order for us to live the lives we have in this great country.
Thank you, General Nash. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Joining me now to talk about the deployment of the Minnesota National Guard Red Bulls to Bosnia in 2003 and 2004 is Brigadier General Bill Leader and current retired Colonel Don Kerr. Gentlemen, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thanks, Don.
Thanks, Don.
General, can you tell us a little bit about your career? How long have you been in the military?
Sure, Tom. I've been in the Minnesota Army National Guard for 28 years. And throughout that, I've been a military police officer. Most recently in January of this year, being promoted to Brigadier General.
Congratulations on the promotion, General.
Thank you.
And you've been deployed several times.
I have. I was in Bosnia, as you just mentioned, from 2003 to 2004. That was a total 10-month deployment. And then I was over in Iraq with the 1st Brigade Combat Team as a battalion commander from September 2005 until July of 2007.
You've had quite a career, General.
Yeah, thank you.
And Colonel Kerr, your background, sir, how long were you in the military?
Yes, sir. I served 29 years total federal service in the National Guard and 5 years on active duty, including that. And then 5 years ago, I retired and I continue to work for the Minnesota Department of Military Affairs. So I still have a bit of a relationship with the Minnesota National Guard that I'm very proud of.
Different uniform, similar job.
Different uniform, kind of different job, Tom, but working with the same great people, and that's what's really rewarding about it.
Colonel Kerr, we want to go back today to the Minnesota National Guard's deployment in 2003 and 4 of the 34th Infantry Division Red Bulls to Bosnia. Can you set that up for us? Why did we go to Bosnia? What was going on there?
Yeah, so Tom, back in 1995, the former Republic of Yugoslavia split up into some of its pre-component parts. A number of different nations went through a fairly rough civil war, and the culmination of that civil war, of that breaking up of the former Yugoslavia, kind of ended in Bosnia. And Bosnia was split among three different fighting factions, and the war there was brought to an end through the Dayton Peace Accords, and part of the Dayton Peace Accords that were signed in 1995 resulted in a U.S. presence there called the Stabilization Force, actually a NATO presence, was U.S.-led NATO presence. And we were the 14th rotation to participate in that. Those rotations lasted anywhere from 6 to 12 months, depending on when they were. So it had been going on for a while by the time we got there, and was a fairly mature theater. But we were there basically to keep peace and make sure that the stability was maintained in the former in Bosnia-Herzegovina, in the former Yugoslavia.
Just quickly, what was the basis of the war there? Was it ethnic? Was it tribal?
Ethnic. The Bosnia-Herzegovina is kind of where East and West met. And there was a rift between the Serbs, who were generally Orthodox Christian, the Croatians, who were generally Western Christians and Catholics, and the Bosniaks, who were kind of remnants of the Ottoman Empire and were Muslim. And those three religiously connected ethnic groups had great difficulty working together in the same land. But again, through the Dayton Peace Accords, they found a way toward peace, and they separated into two, Bosnian-Croat Federation and the Republika Srpska, which functioned as one nation and are still plugging away today.
So they broke into like two separate states, and people were moving on around and displaced, and NATO was asked to come in and provide separation.
Provide separation and maintain peace, that's right. It was called a peace support operation.
So was there actually a DMZ? Was there actually a border?
There is, and it still consists. It's called the Inter-Entity Boundary Line, the IEBL, and it's still laden with mines, though there's been a mine-clearing effort ongoing since the end of the war. Will probably continue to be a legacy there for a long time, and basically marks the line of no man's land between the two warring factions at the end of the war.
So the NATO mission there was to go in and keep the peace, and what else?
The NATO mission there was to maintain peace and also to move toward true Bosnian independence by developing in a Western manner their judiciary, their economy, their political system, their military into a single military through a fairly long process that was well mapped out in not only the military realm, but also the diplomatic realm, the judiciary realm, the economic realm, and other areas, the police enforcement, and it was very difficult, however, to get traction outside that military realm, and there were some challenges in how they could bring to Western standards some of those other aspects of government in Bosnia-Herzegovina. So by the time we got there, we were kind of directed to take a look at, beyond the military scope, how can we do outreach and try to help make up some ground in some of these other areas. And General Leader actually played a pretty significant role in that outreach in the oversight of the police forces in Bosnia-Herzegovina. There were a number of different ones. Each one of the entities had multiple different types of police force. They had a border police and an internal domestic police and some other kind of police I think you can fill you in on. But a very complex situation with a lot of internal competition. And they weren't really speaking with one voice. And General Leader led an effort to reach out and get those police task forces all working in the same sheet of music.
So, General, this was the 14th Stabilization Force, I think was what it was called, and it was NATO command made from troops from many countries?
Yeah, there was multiple countries, I think 12 in our MNB North, which was our sector of the pie. So there was teams from Portugal, Latvia, Lithuania, Poland, Turkey, Italy, just a whole bunch of different countries, even within our area.
So this went on for many years, and actually you fell in on the force that was there for number 13, and you were number 14. What did you find when you got there? Had the forces before you done a pretty good job?
Yeah, I think they did a good job. And, you know, just a little history on the law enforcement there is, before we got there, it was led by the UN 18,000 International Police Task Force. And then in January of 2003, so right before we got there, the European Union Police Mission came into business. And they really had three main objectives: support the fight against organized crime, support police reforms, and watch over police actions that are considered unlawful. First, again, is how we came into play, is that when they formed this organized crime, or looking after organized crime, they created the State Border Service. And we'll talk about that in a little bit more on how we worked and helped professionalize that organization.
Gentlemen, we have to take a short break. When we come back, we want to talk a little bit more about the deployment of the Minnesota National Guard's 34th Infantry Red Bulls to Bosnia in 2003 and 2004, about how many soldiers went over there and the makeup of the soldiers and the jobs that they did. So we'll be right back with Brigadier General Bill Leader and retired Colonel Don Kerr on Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back.
Friends, this is Don Pancake, commander of the Minnesota American Legion. As we continue our mission to train school patrols across the state, we encourage you to make a difference. Please visit legionville.org. That's legionville.org.
Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. We've been joined by Brigadier General Bill Leader and retired Colonel Don Kern. We've been talking about the Minnesota National Guard's 34th Infantry Division, Red Bulls, on their deployment to Bosnia in 2003 and 2004. And Colonel Kirk, can you tell me, when you went over there, how many Minnesota National Guard soldiers went with you, and what was the makeup?
Sure, Tom. Well, at the time, and it's been eclipsed a couple times since then, it was the largest deployment of Minnesota National Guard forces since the Korean War. And we took about 1,100 Minnesota National Guard soldiers over there. Our total U.S. component was about 1,500. We had 100 soldiers from the Army Reserve, only 6 active component soldiers on the deployment. So it was really a true reserve component deployment. The remainder of those National Guard forces, so a total of about 1,400 National Guard forces, those other 300 folks came from 26 other states, plus the District of Columbia and Puerto Rico. So we had a real melting pot of soldiers involved in that thing, almost all of them from the National Guard and Army Reserve.
Colonel, was it unusual for a National Guard unit to be in charge of that Stabilization Force 14th?
Really wasn't. There were multiple rotations ahead of us, three actually that were, I think it was three, 12, 13, no, two in front of us that were National Guard and two after us that were National Guard in that mission. What was a little bit unusual is that the 34th Infantry Division actually stood up the team to go to Bosnia, and just a couple of months behind them stood up another team to go to Kosovo, about the same size and composition. So effectively, using the added assets of the Joint Force Headquarters, the 34th Division generated two division-level headquarters to send to the same theater at the same time, and that's unprecedented. No one else has ever been able to do that.
So one in Bosnia and one in Kosovo. How far were they separated?
It was about 1 hour by air. I don't recall the linear distance, but it seems to me it was about 600 miles, Tom. I'll have to check that to be sure. But that's in the rough order of magnitude.
But two separate independent commands and separate missions. And
separate missions, both in a NATO environment, both working for NATO. But with totally different missions and reporting to different entities in NATO.
General, I understand that while 34th Infantry Division was in Bosnia and Kosovo, one of them needed some help.
Yeah, so, you know, again, the team acted quickly when that call for help came out, and it was really incredible how fast we got the teams rallied out on the tarmac and in the air.
What happened? Why did half of our guardsmen need help and the other didn't? Was some kind of situation boiling?
Yeah, they were having some big situations over there where it was getting pretty volatile. And in order to enhance their force to make sure that they had the right team on the ground, they asked for our help.
So how many of your Bosnia soldiers went? Colonel Kerr, do you know this?
Yeah, Tom, we actually wound up sending two companies, so about 200 soldiers to Kosovo from Bosnia intra-theater. And for the record, it actually wasn't the guys in Kosovo calling for the help. They felt they had the situation under control, but higher headquarters in Naples thought it might be a prudent action to do the reinforcement so that they had folks on the ground. So we had the first company moving on the aircraft actually in 6 hours from notification, and then we followed up about 4 hours later with the second company that was transported to Kosovo same day. And they in-processed them over at Pristina and got them integrated into their force and actually were able to use them on the ground and held on to them for about a week, and then things calmed down and they sent them back home.
You had to feel pretty good to have 200 members of your own unit backing you up in case of a problem.
I would think we'd have to ask them, but I think they were pretty comfortable taking that kind of reinforcement. They already had a relationship with them, so they knew what they were getting, and they all came in wearing the same patch.
That must have been a pretty unusual request, and you handled it quickly.
It was an unusual request, and as most of those things happen, it happened in the middle of the night. A call came in at midnight, and we had to have them on the ramp at 6, and they had the aircraft there shortly after that, and we loaded them up and moved them out.
Incredible. General, you were actually up on the DMZ or up on the border. Was that dangerous duty? Was it pretty quiet by the 14th Stabilization Force? How was it?
Yeah, I think overall it was pretty quiet, Tom. So my team worked pretty closely with the State Border Service, and we did that mostly with our military working dogs. So my team had 4 active duty teams with us, 4 dogs, 2 bomb and 2 drug. And we decided one way that we could professionalize this organization was really to make master trainers. So we spent a lot of time creating material on training dogs and then putting them through the course to certify them that they could then in turn train their teams on bomb dogs and drug dogs. So really going up on the border was, so we train him for 2 or 3 days and then we go do a mission for 1 or 2 days. So whether it was going down to the airport or up at the border, we'd bring them in there and do actual training with live people. So it was pretty interesting. We'd set up a search lane and then we would, I'd ask, Omar was one of the guys. I'd asked him to go and grab a car and it was pretty unique. Then he went up and grabbed a passport off the first car and I turned around and I looked in the lane and there was 10 cars in the lane. So it's a communist mentality is that the first car went to the lane, every single one after it followed it. So I had to go up and shoo them away.
Flood the place and overwhelm them, right?
Yeah. I think in the U.S., when the guys get picked ahead of you, you smile and you drive out smartly. So it was pretty interesting.
General, at the time, your position, you were more in charge of more than just the border. Were you the provost? Is that what you said?
Yeah, I was a provost marshal. So in the military, the provost marshal is like the chief of police. So the other thing that we worked on was really enhancing the communication within the police departments. So I worked a lot with the local police. And we whittled it down to really the investigator level is what we tried to really affect because those are the guys that are talking to each other. So we'd bring them in. We'd have training for them. We'd have them showcase cases that they're working on and, again, get them talking to each other. And we were successful at that. And it really came out at the end when they had some locals dressing up as police officers and breaking into homes. So they were investigating this. And they caught him in the act. Caught two. The third one jumped in his car and drove away. And the success was is that each one of the cantons or districts, they were calling the other police entity to let them know that they're coming in their area. The funny story behind it, if I can back up a second, is that most of the law enforcement agencies didn't have enough gas to drive around. So they would hold up, they would drive somewhere and hold up a paddle that was red. And if you saw the paddle, you had to stop. So fast forward to this guy cruising through the different cantons and districts, and he's going to go to jail for probably 5 to 10 years. And he comes up upon the police checkpoint and they hold out the paddle and he pulled over. So it's pretty interesting that a guy that's looking at 5 to 10 years sees the paddle, and I wish I had a video on his face and him looking down and saying, oh, crap, I saw it, so now I have to pull over.
We're speaking with Brigadier General Bill Leader and retired Colonel Don Kerr about the Bosnia deployment of the Red Bulls in 2003 and 2004 on Minnesota Military Radio. Colonel Kerr, at the time, I believe you were Chief of Staff?
Yes, I was the Chief of Staff for General Nash on the deployment.
General Nash, the Adjutant General. What did you have to do as chief of staff in Bosnia?
I had to coordinate the activities of the staff, which included integrating the liaison officers from the various subordinate units in the brigade into our headquarters operation and running the staff. We used to have a saying for it that I was on the B team because we had to be there all the time. So the general and some of the other commanders spent a lot of time out traveling around visiting the subordinate units. I spent a lot of time on Eagle Base making sure that I was cracking the whip on the staff, getting their PowerPoint done on time to the appropriate standard.
So the overall mission, we've already learned, secure the border, help keep the peace in terms of law enforcement. Was there unexploded ordnance? There had to be other major parts of the mission that we acted on?
There were actually a number of other major parts, including the collection of unexploded ordnance. But the thing that I think we were probably... it was probably the best thing we did for the world at that time, was we had a unique opportunity to help the Bosnians eliminate unexploded and unsafe ordnance that had been stored from the Yugoslav era. The former Yugoslavia was in a very interesting position. They really were not part of the Western Bloc and they were not part of the Eastern Bloc. They kind of rode the razor's edge between those the USSR's power base and the United States' power base. And as such, they kind of had a different mentality about their own security, so they decentralized a lot of that. And they stored a lot of ordnance, ammunition, and explosives just out in the population. And when the whole thing broke apart, a lot of that ordnance kind of got a little unaccounted for and would turn up in unexpected places. Well, even when they regained control of it, it was not stored in a safe manner. Obviously, we're very particular about how we store explosives and ammunition. They weren't so much. So there was a lot of very dangerous unexploded ordnance that some of it had been laid intentionally during the war, and a lot of it was just in storage, but a lot of it was very old.
And you had a bomb disposal unit as part of the unit?
Not only do we have a bomb disposal unit, they were very busy, but we also had a mission to actually oversee the reform of the Bosnian military, and it was called the Joint Military Authority. And the Joint Military Authority took on the additional task of, in an organized fashion, collecting up all of this unexploded ordnance and turned it into an assembly line of destruction to eliminate this very dangerous thing from the lives of all the folks in that region. And at the end, we had destroyed 1,700 tons of unexploded ammunition, ordnance, mines, grenades, and artillery shells and rockets that is no longer there and therefore no longer dangerous. And we're very proud of that. That's something that we thought was very important, a very important aspect of our rotation that nobody else did.
So a big part of the mission was secure the country and try to return it to some kind of normalcy so they could operate properly sometime in the future.
That's exactly right, Tom.
Thank you, Colonel Kerr. General, any final thoughts? Was this a successful mission for the Minnesota National Guard?
Oh, absolutely. It was a successful mission. You know, our team really retained their focus throughout the rotation. We met our objectives that we had set. We had very specific objectives. We executed our operations safely and aggressively, as good Red Bull soldiers do. And we really created a plan and conditions for the next group to come in, pick up where we were, and continue on.
General, as is normal, I'm learning, for National Guard units, the age of the soldiers that went with you varies greatly. It's not like active duty units where they all go in and they're in their 20s and 30s. You had a wide range of age, and unfortunately, we lost one soldier.
Yeah, we did have a wide different gap in ages, and we did. We lost Sergeant Major Denny Tellog. He was an MP, so I knew Denny my whole entire career, and I know Don here also worked with him on state active duty missions, and Don, he was a great guy. Denny was like your brother, and everywhere you went with Denny, everybody knew Denny and loved Denny, and we miss him.
And where else would a longtime Minnesota National Guard soldier volunteer in his late 50s and go over and help to bring another country back to normal? What a great legacy.
Yeah, he's a great soldier, and that's what he wanted to do, is he wanted to go on a mission, and that was his last mission. When he came back, he was going to retire.
Gentlemen, I want to thank you for joining us today to talk about the 2003-2004 deployment of our 34th Infantry Division Red Bulls to Bosnia.
Thanks, Tom.
That was Brigadier General Bill Leader and retired Colonel Don Kerr. Please stay with us.
Hi, this is Bill Popp of the Minnesota Military Family Foundation. An Army squad is made up of 8 soldiers, and when the squad is on patrol, each soldier is dependent on each other for safety. When a soldier is distracted because of a financial crisis with the family back home, that puts every soldier on the squad at risk. The Minnesota Military Family Foundation helps turn a bad situation into a positive one. The foundation provides financial support during a financial crisis at home. This helps re-energize the soldier. The soldier feels the financial burden lifted and has feelings of pride because of the support from the community at home. When the soldier is no longer focused on the financial crisis at home, the soldier is able to stay engaged in the mission and do his duty to protect other soldiers in the squad. When we help one soldier, we're helping all soldiers. When we help one military family, we're helping all military families. If you're in a position to help, please donate. Go to MinnesotaMilitaryFamilyFoundation.org.
Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. In a moment, we'll discover the great work being done by Tribute to the Troops. But first, it's time for the Commissioner's Corner, a weekly update from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Now here's Commissioner Larry Shelato.
Memorial Day is a time to honor the memory and service of all veterans and military who have given their lives in the service of this country. No greater sacrifice could ever be asked of an individual. The service of these veterans has impacted the life of every single citizen in this great nation. It is for that sacrifice that I salute my fallen comrades. Across the generations and across the centuries, Americans have answered the call to duty, and many paid the ultimate price. We can't even begin to contemplate the world today had men and women we honor on Memorial Day not stood fast against our enemies throughout history. It is never over. Missions may end, but the legacy left and the pain of their absence endures. This Memorial Day, let us remember.
Thank you, Commissioner Shelledo. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Tribute to the Troops is an organization of grateful Americans dedicated to preserving the memory of those men and women of our nation's military who lost their lives while bravely protecting our freedom. It is in their memory that we honor and convey our heartfelt gratitude to family and friends left behind and extend our sincere appreciation to all veterans who have served, whether in war or in peace. That's the mission statement for Tribute to the Troops, and joining me now is Jim Woodruff and Jim Beardsley, both members of the Board of Directors. Gentlemen, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you, Tom.
Jim Woodruff, we'll start with you. We got two Jims in here, so if I say Jim, well, I'll point. The listeners will love that. They can follow that. Jim Woodruff, you are the chairman of the Minnesota chapter of Tribute to the Troops, and you sit on the national board. How long has Tribute to the Troops been around?
We started in 2004.
And how did it get started?
Well, a group of Minnesotans saw a Rocky Lynn video, and they talked about it, and they decided, you know what? We need to do something for these families that had lost loved ones in the War on Terror. What about if we start a motorcycle ride, and we ride out and see them? And at that time, they didn't know what they were going to say to them or what they were going to do when they got there, but they decided to try it. So one day in October of 2004, about 20 to 30 of them, depending on who you ask, visited three families in Minnesota and let them know that a bunch of people cared that they had lost somebody in their family. And at the end of that ride, they realized what they had stumbled onto and they saw the need for this. So it continued, and now we're going on our 10th year.
And Jim Beardsley, for our listeners who might not be familiar with Rocky Lynn, I understand he's co-founder. Can you tell us a little about him?
Well, amazingly, Rocky was at the visit when they came to visit my family. And so when I first saw Rocky, I had watched Rocky before he became Rocky Lynn. He used to be Rocky Rash before that, years ago, local singer, local artist. And I said to my wife when they were walking up, I said, they must not have been able to get that Rocky Lynn fella because they sent Rocky Rash. Well, I didn't know he changed his name when he went to Tennessee and Nashville and got famous. But it was great to me because I followed Rocky a little bit when he was just a local guy singing around Coon Rapids and the area.
And Jim, we're talking to Jim Woodruff now. We're going to have to go Jim 1 and Jim 2, something like that. Jim, were you on that first ride?
I was, actually. That was the first time I'd ever gone on a tribute ride. I didn't know what it was all about, and I thought it'd be kind of a fun thing to do because I'd been active with the Patriot Guard, and I started this mission that day, and as fate would have it, it brought us to the Beardsley home, and I met Jim and Diana and their family.
Now, the first day, first ride, visited three families. Was it already the nonprofit organization Tribute to the Troops, or was it just a loose affiliation of riders going to visit the families of our fallen heroes?
It was just a word-of-mouth thing that they decided, hey, let's try this and see what happens, and we think we want to do this. And so it was just a group of friends, mostly, and people that rode together and decided, let's just go do this, and they did. And the nonprofit part of it and the organization came in the following years.
Came later. So who pulled together that first ride?
I believe it was Rocky and Mike Lundeen, Randy Vaughn. I wasn't there at that time, so I'm going by what I've just heard. But, you know, it was a group of friends, but mainly out of the Chisago, Lindstrom area. And they all rode together, decided to go do this, and they did.
Pulled together a bunch of riders, and off they went. How many were on that first ride?
Yeah, it depends on who you ask, and I've heard anywhere from 20 to 30 motorcycles and 30 to 45 people. So somewhere in that range is what they had. They didn't keep real good records back then because they didn't know they were going to keep doing this.
And the story grows, so now it's 100, I suppose.
We know it wasn't that many. But
so some of the guys got together and decided we want to show the families, our Gold Star families who have lost a loved one in the military, that someone else remembers and cares.
Absolutely. We all recognize that, you know, that table is always going to have an empty chair. And we want them to know that American citizens and regular folks like us recare and we remember.
We're speaking with Jim Woodruff and Jim Beardsley from Tribute to the Troops on Minnesota Military Radio. Jim Beardsley, did they come to your house first?
Yeah, they came to my house on a Saturday, and they do a 3-day ride. So that's the first time I heard or seen in Tribute to the Troops. My wife said they're coming, and
so they called to let you know that some people were going to stop by just to say hello.
Yeah, it was a little bit more formal than that. They said, you know, we'll be here at the exact time. There's going to be this many people, and we actually made lunch for them, and you know, they weren't sure how many. They thought 50 motorcycles. Well, they showed up with 100 and some, and so we had to quick start making more food because we were we had friends helping us, and we were offered to make lunch for them. So we had 100 and some people in our garage having lunch when they came to visit us. But it was overwhelming to see them come down the street. You know, that we could hear them coming for seemed like an eternity, and then they started coming down the street one at a time and just never stopped coming. It was amazing.
That many motorcycles, they could make some noise, can't they?
Yeah, absolutely.
Was it just your wife and you, or did you have some friends there?
Oh, yeah, we had some friends and family there. But
so when all those motorcycles came and they filled up your yard and your garage, what did you think of that?
It was amazing. And my wife and I both ride, and we just couldn't believe we hadn't heard of this organization before. So that was on Saturday. On Sunday, we rode with them. And we rode up to Camp Ripley and had lunch with the soldiers at Camp Ripley, and then they do a concert down at Medina. So we got to ride that day. And that was our first ride with Tribute to the Troops.
Well, that happened quick, didn't it?
It did.
Gentlemen, we have to take a short break. When we come back, I want to review what happened after that first day's ride. And Jim Beardsley, I want to talk to you a little bit about your son. This is Minnesota Military Radio. We have to take a short break. We'll be right back.
This is Major General Rick Nash, Minnesota's Adjutant General, encouraging you to hire today's veterans. Today's veterans have a track record of integrity and have triumph over adversity. Today's veterans are talented, team-oriented, and technologically savvy. Hiring a service member just makes sense. Veterans have the training, work ethic, and proven skills that will immediately add value to your business. Help good business get better by hiring today's veteran. Visit PositivelyMinnesota.com/veterans.
Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons, and we've been joined by Jim Woodruff and Jim Beardsley from Tribute to the Troops. Jim Woodruff, for our listeners out there, anyone that wants to become a member or join Tribute to the Troops or donate some money to help with scholarships, where would they go?
They can go to our website, which is tributetothetroops.org. That's tributetothetroops.org. And there are links there to our Minnesota chapter, as well as the national site and other chapters that we have around the country.
And, Jim, there's quite a video on the homepage, isn't there?
There is quite a video there. It's very powerful and it's very moving. I'm still moved by it when I look at it.
It's hard to watch without tearing up.
It is.
Jim Beardsley, I want to come back to you. This first ride, the first day they came to your house, and they came there because you lost your son in the military, didn't you?
Yes, sir.
Can you tell us what happened?
Well, we were notified, just like you see in the movies, you know, two guys come to the door and dressed in their uniforms and tell you that, you know, they're sorry to tell you that your son was killed. He was killed in Iraq. I was working at the time, so my wife called me, so it was kind of hard for her to be there by herself. And that was February 26th, and Tribute to the Troops came about 6 months later to visit us. And so it was still pretty fresh for us, you know, 6 months. But we knew we had to move forward. We wanted to fall forward, not fall over. And so Tribute to the Troops has been huge for us and other families that have been involved in what we call moving forward and in our loss.
And Jim, they refer to you and your wife and your family as a Gold Star family because you've lost a loved one in military. You were telling me earlier that there are other Gold Star families that have joined in the rides.
Yes, absolutely. We have we actually have a couple other Gold Star families on our board now, and we've got I would say a dozen or more at any given ride that are families of fallen soldiers that ride with us to go visit other families. And so we can stand behind them, families, and try to support those other families. And I think that's important.
You've been on both sides of it. So when you're greeting another family and they see your gold tag, they know, don't they?
They do know. And I think it helps them because they know, you know. It's hard for them to take that from someone that doesn't know. But when you know,
you share the pain.
Yeah, absolutely.
Jim Woodruff, since that first day, tell us how the organization has evolved.
Oh, gosh. It went from that first day with that one ride. Now, every September, we have a three-day ride. We visit families for 2 days. And then the third day, we go to Camp Ripley and have lunch with and buy lunch for the soldiers that are at Camp Ripley. Then we come back to the Medina, and we have a memorial concert that Rocky puts on for all the families, not only the ones that we visited this year, but all years past. We've expanded into, we've gone national now. It started in Minnesota, and the national board is still here. We've also expanded into Illinois, Oregon, and North Carolina just recently, and we're hoping to have more in the very near future. And we also started fundraising, and one of the biggest fundraiser that we do is when we identify the child of a fallen Minnesota hero, we start a 529 education account for that child. We manage it for them and add to it as until they turn 18 years of age. And when they turn 18, we hand it over to them in the honor and in the name of their mom or their dad that's no longer here with them.
Wow. How do you do your fundraising, Jim?
Well, a number of ways. The biggest way is this year for 2013, we are raffling off a new custom painted Harley Davidson motorcycle. It's a 2013 Street Glide. We did this last year with a motorcycle. We raised about $28,000. The proceeds of that went to the education fund, and we're hoping to make even a bigger contribution this year with that motorcycle raffle, and we will give that away at the end of our three-day ride in September.
So if anybody wants to help with that, please go to tributetothetroops.org. We'll have a link to that on our Facebook page. Jim Beardsley, they're a little more organized now, I assume, when you go on these rides and you go to see the families. You give the families some things now. What do they get?
Well, we have a picture, a plaque of their soldier, their fallen soldier. And we have dog tags, gold dog tags, you know, that they can wear around their neck to remember. I do it all the time. And we also have teddy bears that we give to the children. If there's children from the lost soldier or maybe siblings, sometimes they're brothers and sisters, and angel pins. And then we also give them the flag, a ride flag. And the only way to get that ride flag is either to be on the ride or to be visited by Tribute to the Troops.
So when you have these events and you're going to visit the families, you put the call out to the riders, and then you call the families to make sure it's okay to stop by?
Correct. Yep. We call, set up. Actually, my wife does that. She calls and visits with the families, sets up a visit, finds out what time would be good for them, and then you know, the rides are organized at the same time every year, so the riders know when we're going.
And there's some crossover. Some of those riders are Patriot Guard riders too, aren't they?
Yes, they are.
Jim Woodruff, we're running out of time. Any final thoughts for our listeners about Tribute to the Troops?
Oh, we just encourage anyone that wants to come out and ride with us and really have a earth-shattering experience and a life-changing experience, come on out and join us on one of these rides. There's nothing we could tell you that would convey the emotion that goes into one of those rides and one of those visits. You have to be there in order to know how deep it is. But I tell people all the time, it changed my life, and it really has. So I encourage anyone that wants to come out and pay tribute to a fallen soldier to please do so.
Jim, great work. Keep it up.
Thank you, Tom.
Jim Beardsley, I can't imagine when all those riders showed up at your house, how did you and your wife feel? And clearly you loved it because you're part of this organization now. But I just can't imagine all those motorcycles coming and all of these people that you didn't even know coming to say that we remember, we care.
Well, and that's what's meaningful to us, is that there was a lot of people that we didn't know. And up until that point, we didn't know that they cared. And showing us and showing other families that there's people out there that just care because you lost a soldier, that care because, you know, you lost a mom or dad, son or daughter. It's emotions are, it's like a roller coaster.
For those of us that are still here, life goes on and we need to help each other, don't we?
Yes, sir.
And you guys are doing a fantastic job of it with Tribute to the Troops. And once again, for our listeners, if you want to check out and learn more about this organization, please go to tributetothetroops.org. What a fantastic job, gentlemen. Thanks for joining us on Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you,
Tom. Thank you for having us, Tom.
This is Jim Woodruff and Jim Beardsley from Tribute to the Troops. Before we go, there are a few upcoming events we'd like to mention. First, Richfield will be dedicating their beautiful new Honoring All Veterans Memorial on Memorial Day at 2 p.m. at Veterans Park. Major General Rick Nash, Minnesota's Adjutant General, will be the featured speaker. Next up, Minnesota's Ride for Healing kicks off May 27th in St. Paul. The week-long ride will cover four corners of the state and will be capped off by a June 1st rally weekend in the Brainerd Lakes area. Proceeds will support the National Vietnam Veterans Memorial Education Center. Then on Sunday, June 9th at Lake Minnetonka, there will be a special muskie fishing event welcoming Minnesota's veterans. Proceeds will benefit the Wounded Warrior Project. Also, we'd like to remind you that if you're listening to us on our flagship station, Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, tune in on Memorial Day from 6 to 9 a.m. for our third annual Memorial Day live show. Again, that's this Memorial Day from 6 to 9 a.m. on Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, and also on iHeartRadio. For details on all these events and more, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, or subscribe to us on MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. We're just about out of time. If you have a mailbag question or a suggestion for a topic you'd like us to address, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com and click on Contact Us to send us a note. Thanks for listening to this edition of Minnesota Military Radio. I'd like to thank our guests for joining us this week, Vince Hokanen, Commissioner Larry Shelatov of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and finally, Minnesota's Adjutant General, Major General Rick Nash. Please join us Monday for a live 3-hour Memorial Day special show from 6 to 9 a.m. on Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, which can also be heard on iHeartRadio for those of you in outstate Minnesota. That's coming up on Memorial Day or online anytime at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. I'm Tom Lyons, and I hope that you make a difference in someone's life this week.
You've been listening to Minnesota Military Radio with Tom Lyons. Tom is the founder and owner of Phalon Partners Limited, a Twin Cities merger and acquisition firm. This has been a production of Clear Channel, MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com, the Minnesota National Guard, BeyondTheYellowRibbon.org, and the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Podcasts of the show are available at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com.